Can you
So
hear me?
welcome. Great to have you guys here. Thank you for joining us for today's session of our Web3 One is to One talk show, where we bring in people building really cool stuff here in crypto, and they come in and they tell us about what they're building and just essentially a community might have and demystify whatever misconceptions there might be about the protocol they're building. Today, we have with us Kevin from DFX Finance. And that being said, Kevin, how's it going?
Doing well today. How are you guys?
All good. It's good. It's been a pretty good day.
Awesome. Excited to be here and chat with the Dapless community.
Yeah, for sure. We too. We're super stoked. So tell us, Kevin. First off, you know, give us an who you are.
Yeah. So I am one of the co-founders of DFX Finance. DFX Finance is looking to build an ecosystem that allows people to swap between different stable coins of different currencies. So basically putting foreign exchange on the blockchain. Right now, we are probably the biggest foreign exchange protocol in the blockchain crypto space. And we can continue to sort of like build up our ecosystem and our network. We partner with like great ecosystem partners like Circle, issuer of USDC, Chainlink, which provides our oracles, and many, many more. I myself have been in crypto for almost 7 years, since like 2015, so like 7 years. Been building mostly on Ethereum for most of my crypto tenure. I started off like, I guess like, a little different from most people. Like I came from the banking sector, did Forex at a large bank, and then moved into blockchain crypto, went to work at Consensus for a few years, and then left to start a fiat on-off ramp in Canada, helping people process payments and convert it to crypto. And then most recently started DFX about a year and a half, 2 years ago, and have building a decentralized foreign exchange protocol for the last year and a half to 2 years.
Awesome. Yeah, your experience has been quite different, and considering the fact that you've been here for quite a while, I think 7 years, that's OG status right there, my guy.
Thank you. Yeah, it's been quite, you know, sometimes it's like a little roller coaster. We've seen like, you know, bear and bull markets, and you know, like this market right now, like it's the best time for building, and we keep continuing to build.
That's interesting. Yes, yeah, so this market is also familiar for you, right, at this point.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like nothing that we haven't seen before. We've seen worse before, so like this is that thing. Like we ride the wave, like regardless if it's like high tide or low tide.
Cool. So that's interesting. So what are your, and you alluded to that a little bit, but what are your advice, and how would you encourage people who quite literally already like panic at this point in time? It's like, yeah, no, this is the end. It's doomsday already. So like, what do you have to say about that to the ecosystem and to the community?
Honestly, it's really a lot of it's like, take a step back, think of like why or, you know, how you first got into crypto first, and see if those like motivations and those like things that brought you into crypto still apply. And if it does, then, you know, keep building on that conviction, because, you know, from what we know, it always swings between like bull and bear market every couple of years. So we do have like, you know, the people in this space do have expectation that it will swing back up. It's just, you know, a matter of time. And for those that, you know, hey, your thesis is, you know, it's different now, or like things don't hold true to what you originally, you know, thought, then, you know, it may not be the space for you. I guess that's my take on the situation right now.
Right. Right. So as opposed to, you know, possibly encouraging people who, you know, so there are two angles to it. There is the angle of people who are quite literally terrified. They have no idea what to do. And perhaps they came in without having that much of an expectation. They weren't entirely sure what they were getting into, but obviously came in with the hype and everything. They rode the wave. And now things are in shambles, right? So, but they're scared. They're scared. They have no idea what to do. So does it mean to be the case that it's rather they take a step back and leave this space? Or there's some form of encouragement to encourage them to stay just a bit more to get educated, contribute to the ecosystem?
No, absolutely. Yeah, education is like, you know, it's such an important part. We're so early in this technology and this like this cycle that like education is still such a key component of it. It's like, you know, back when, let's just say, iPhones and smartphones were coming out, you know, only a handful of people were using it. But now everyone, you know, your grandmother has an like iPhone and doing banking and mobile payments and everything on their phone. It does take time. There is a, like, you know, learning curve, but eventually we'll get there.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a solid piece of advice there. So, guys, if you're out here and, you know, it's been a rough couple months, and I do empathize with every single one of you, and I, you know, we're part of this struggle, you know, but just keep at it, to be honest. And yeah, like Kevin said, it really, really does get better. And, you know, just educate yourself, get some skills, and keep building. Just keep building. I'm pretty sure you can't go wrong with building, to be honest.
Yeah, and, you know, there's a lot of ways to get involved that, you know, doesn't require, like, you know, in like insane amounts of skill or insane amounts of money. You can join communities. You can just provide feedback, you know, do the little things and, you know, start getting involved. And as you sort of get involved early on, like, you essentially, you know, build a resume and people start getting to know you and people start recommending you and stuff like that. You can almost like build a career just like starting off in small communities. So I highly recommend people just, you know, get out there, don't be shy, and just, you know, be involved.
Awesome. Yeah. So Kevin, tell us about what is DFX Finance?
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe give you guys a little background on DFX Finance and how like how we're sort of a little different. We generally get compared to like Uniswap and Curve, like most often because we are a decentralized exchange. What we do a little differently is that we focus on foreign stable coins. So stable coins peg to different currencies outside of the US dollar. So right now, obviously, most stable coins are pegged to the US dollar, like USDC, USDT, BUSD, and DAI, and so forth. But what we focus on is like stable coins that are pegged to the euro, the Canadian dollar, the Singapore dollar, New Zealand dollar, and so forth, so that we basically, you know, create an ecosystem of stable coins that people can use in their native currency. And what DFX provides is basically an engine that allows you to swap between different currencies, like, let's just say Canadian dollars to euro, the euros to Singapore dollar, Singapore dollar to like New Zealand dollar, and so forth. And how we do it is we use the technology, like the unique capabilities of the blockchain technology, basically pool funds from people all around the world, like in different currencies, and allow people to trade against these different currencies. And obviously we charge a little bit of a fee there, but the fee is so small because we intend to do like really, really large volumes on like a daily, you know, annual basis, such that these fees start adding up and become substantial for the people that provide the liquidity. And when you take a step back and you really think about it, it's not really that different from how banks operate. So banks, you know, they take your money, you deposit your money into the bank, the bank gets like, you know, billions of dollars, and then they either lend it out, they do, you know, different things to earn a fee. And then the bank gives you like a small portion of that back to you in terms of like an interest rate. So we sort of like essentially cut the bank out of the equation, and we sort of put that functionality into a smart contract where we allow people to pool money in a decentralized fashion without any middleman. And the contract sort of like handles everything. And then all the fees that are generated from the swaps get sent back to the people that provide the liquidity. So it becomes a much more efficient system and a more like global system instead of like a bank managing the money. So yeah, like that's generally the way that like we operate. And we work with stablecoin issuers from around the world that build these stablecoins, take the different currencies, and allow people to get in and out of like, you know, Canadian dollar, euro, Singapore dollar, whatever, easier.
Mm. Awesome, cool. So essentially, DFX Finance is, you know, Uniswap, but for stablecoins, and then the ability to actively trade these tokens and then do whatever needs to be done with them.
Yeah, you can sort of think of it that way. Our niche is that we focus on foreign stablecoins, so stablecoins that are, you know, not US dollar based. And then right. We have a very unique algorithm that uses a Chainlink Oracle to provide an external price feed to sort of like decide on that price.
Okay, sweet. Okay, cool. So tell us, Kevin, why exactly is DFX important? Why do you think, you know, why was this necessary to be built?
So I'm going to jump into a few different things. Like, one, not everyone transacts in the US dollar. You don't pay your taxes, you don't pay your rent, you don't buy your food with US dollar. And because of that, at some point in your sort of like crypto journey, you have to convert basically from US dollar back to your native currency. And at some point you're paying like either an exchange fee or an FX spread during this conversion. And you normally get hit, you know, like 1, 2, 3, or even more percent to do that conversion. We sort of drive down the cost of converting, let's just say US dollar back into your native currency, or like crypto back into your native currency by like a significant factor. Like we're talking about like as low as 0.05%. So like 5 basis points is all it can take to go from like US dollar to your native currency, or your native currency to the US dollar, to like, let's just say, you know, send to someone else across the world, or let's just say you want to buy Bitcoin or Ether. It doesn't matter what you want to do with it. At the end of the day, we give you the best price to do it. And then, like, secondly, the foreign exchange market is the largest financial market in the world. Like $6.6 trillion a day get transacted in foreign exchange. A lot of that is leverage, but even a small, small percentage of that is like an insane amount of money. And it's actually surprising that there's not that much focus on foreign exchange in the crypto space. And we're here to sort of like seize that opportunity. And we're the market leaders in that right now.
Yeah, that's cool. That's pretty impressive. Yeah, what you said is actually true. There aren't a lot of market for foreign exchange. There aren't a lot of protocols handling and solving this problem. I think everyone essentially defaults and relies on USDC, USDT. Essentially, if it's not the dollar, then it really doesn't matter. But it's good to see that, you know, DFX is building a tool that cuts across multiple currencies and multiple locations and that sort of evens things out. So that is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. There's like, it's actually sort of like it seems that like there isn't a more, like more, I would say like competitors or more people who are like working on this problem in the space. Like we see a lot of people like trying to solve for like derivatives and futures and all that stuff. But like we don't see enough focus on the foreign exchange market, and we're about to change that.
Yeah, awesome, cool. That's pretty cool. Written for DFX and seeing all the cool stuff yet to be built. All right, we have a hand up. We see you, Papa. So, you know, please shoot if you have a question. Let's go.
Yeah, first of all, I want to say great job, Kevin. I really like the protocol, but I was wondering, is like regular non-crypto people also a target audience for you, and how do you want to reach those people? Because well, I've talked to some friends about DFX, and they're all like, okay, cool, and then I do something else and not interested anymore. So I was wondering, yeah, how do we reach the people who are not interested in crypto?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. Like the way that I sort of think about DFX is that it's more of like an infrastructure. So we build it out and we provide the tooling for our partners and our integration partners. One being example, let's just say Telcoin. I think you might be familiar with them, that they build on top of our technology and basically spread our technology out to their users. And we will continue to work with other partners to provide more of like quote unquote a front end interface into the DFX ecosystem, allowing more people to get visibility or even like use DFX without even knowing they're using DFX. And at some point, we want to get obviously people that are not in crypto to use DFX. So what we will sort of on a long-term horizon basis is like, we want to build sort of like a wrapper around DFX that is Web2 friendly, so that your traditional fintech applications can hook into the power of DFX and what we can do in terms of like providing a better pricing than what banks can do, what, you know, money changers can do, that they can hook into our API and provide a swap rate between, like, let's just say US dollar and euros for users in Europe. Their users end up like not even knowing they're using DFX behind the scenes. So ultimately, that's the point we want to get to. We don't think like, you know, the team at DFX will ultimately reach quote unquote billions of users by ourselves. We want to work with like multiple hundreds of partners around the world to sort of supply this technology and for them to sort of offer it to their users.
Cool, man. Sounds good.
Well, we're building out the network, and once you know things are more, you know, we have a wider coverage, these things start coming into play.
My question was for DFX. I wanted to know the kind of like purpose of the DFX token, because if I want to provide liquidity, what are the benefits, or you know, what does that hold?
Yeah, great question, and this actually leads me into sort of separate segment in terms of like what we're doing with the DFX token. And we're actually going through a semi-major like migration in terms of tokenomics. Starting next week, we are actually changing the tokenomics of the DFX token. Originally, it was a governance token. It still is a governance token, but the governance like aspect will change. If you're familiar with Curve's VE, CRV or Vote Escrow Curve token, we're migrating to that kind of sort of like voting system where you are required to lock up your DFX tokens to receive a voting sort of like equivalent of your DFX token, and only those tokens can be used to vote on different proposals, on different allocations of the DFX liquidity mining rewards. So the way that works right now is that, you know, DFX tokens are allocated to different pools in our ecosystem for the different currencies on a monthly basis on a fixed amount. Starting next week, it will actually move to sort of like a dynamic amount where on a week-by-week basis, the pools can get a different amount depending on like how many votes it gets from VE DFX holders. So for people that hold DFX, can choose to lock up your DFX token for as little as 1 week. So that's like one voting period, or as much as like 4 years, which is a max lockup period. And the longer you lock up your token for, the more amplified your VE DFX comes into play. So, you know, you can have like, let's just say 1,000 DFX, but you lock it up for 4 years, that will have more voting power than if someone had 10,000 DFX locking up for 1 week. So it sort of really changes the dynamics in terms of like how governance works and who sort of has a say in the DFX ecosystem. The more conviction you have, the longer you lock up the DFX for, the more voting power you essentially gain.
Got it. And this is happening, you said, in a week or so.
Yeah, in roughly a week's time. And one more thing, actually, because you were talking about liquidity pools, the more VE DFX you hold, so the more DFX you lock up, you essentially get a boosted reward when you're providing liquidity into any of the DFX pools. So your APR will be higher than if someone did not provide any, if anyone did not lock up DFX tokens. This is really to encourage people to participate in the DFX ecosystem and sort of like, I would say totally eliminate, but sort of like further eliminate mercenary capital in the ecosystem that is essentially just farming DFX tokens.
Right. Makes sense. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Evan.
All right. Sweet. Okay. So cool. A handful of your answers revolved around the technical side of things and, you know, making DFX usable for the average user. And I suppose I'm curious as to, from a functional perspective, right, is there a world that exists where DFX's UX is as seamless, you could say, as what we have with the traditional centralized exchanges, right? But that doesn't make it a centralized platform, but essentially making sure that DFX is useful to people who do not necessarily have the technical knowledge of crypto. So having to set up a MetaMask, having to handle all of those interactions, is there a world that exists where the DFX team is trying to solve that problem?
So in the near future, the short answer is probably no. The focus is really still quote unquote crypto native, but be integrated in, let's just say, a DEX aggregators like 1inch, Matcha, Paraswap, and so forth, to make it sort of easier to use the DFX technology even without being like on the DFX website or using our own interface, and just using a more common interface. So that's one thing. And then second, it's like on a longer term approach, as I mentioned, we want to sort of provide sort of like a wrapper or an SDK for the DFX ecosystem, such that, you know, fintech companies themselves can sort of like obfuscate a lot of the technical like components of the crypto ecosystem, but still like leverage it like on the back end of these fintech companies, but provide a separate like front end interface that users are more familiar with, like in terms of like maybe like a traditional mobile application or like a web app and so forth, that they don't really need to use a MetaMask wallet. Like essentially the company, let's just say it could be, you know, Stripe or TransferWise or Robinhood or whoever, they can basically use DFX in their backend system to get a better rate and pass it on to their users. So that's sort of like where I see the mass of adoption comes into play, where we become sort of like an infrastructure as a service.
I get you. So as opposed to DFX solving the problem of accessibility, you build the infrastructure and the people who already have that accessibility figured out sort of integrate DFX with their current solutions, right?
Absolutely. I think that's the better way to sort of like move forward. And it will get DFX into the hands of more people faster this way.
Yeah, that is true. I think that is a more scalable approach as opposed to having to build things from the ground up and then, you know, trying to distribute and get people onto crypto. Yeah, that sounds really good. All right, that sounds good. So when I was going through the, you know, DFX's website and I think the documentation, it said, you know, DFX is building stablecoins for the world. What exactly does that mean and how does that come into play?
Yeah, so I think that like stablecoins and currencies outside of the US dollar are like hugely underrepresented. And from that perspective, we want to, you know, help build up an ecosystem that, you know, caters to stablecoins that are not pegged to the US dollar. So when we say we're building stablecoins for the world, we want to build stablecoins in every currency possible around the world so that people can use, you know, stablecoins in their native currency for, you know, whatever reason. It could just be domestic payments or it could be like international global payments, remittance and so forth. So we're just here to sort of bootstrap this ecosystem.
All right, cool. Awesome. So essentially giving more eyes and awareness to all of the other stablecoins that exist that is outside of the US dollar.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Cool. That sounds good. So, you know, this question I'm about to ask is one I'm curious about. I suppose the answer might be a bit obvious, but I love getting perspectives on people I bring on this talk show. So yesterday when Rush was going over the demo, which was an amazing demo, by the way, I think you guys should stop by at dfx.finance and play around with it. So when he was going over the demo and trying to, you know, show us how it works and all that cool stuff, we got to a point where to actually carry out the transaction, and that was when, so you're trading a certain amount of token, and then obviously we got introduced with Ethereum's gas fee, right? So, and yes, I do know that also DFX is currently on Polygon as well. So we are on Ethereum, and DFX is on Ethereum and also on Polygon. So that's cool. However, though, my question is, where do you see the future of gas fees as it pertains to crypto in general? Now, this could be perhaps layer two solutions with Ethereum or an entirely different approach. Maybe everyone, you know, uses Polygon more as opposed to, you know, scaling Ethereum and reducing gas fees with all of the layer two solutions. How do you think about that problem that the entire crypto space currently face? Because right now, gas fees aren't as expensive because the bear market, there aren't that many transactions as opposed to like a year ago. Assuming the market picks up and, you know, everyone, you know, we have 20, 100 times more usage as opposed to what we had last year. And then the prices just hits the roof. How do you think the crypto market will survive and even scale at all?
Yeah, honestly, like the current approach isn't very scalable, especially on Ethereum. Ethereum will eventually just be a settlement chain for other, you know, layer two, layer threes, and so forth. But I honestly do think that at some point it requires like many more chains. Almost like dApp chains, like, you know, every application might end up having their own chain that's somewhat interoperable with another one. Like, even as much as, like, you know, let's just say, like, Polygon says they're scalable, and all these other chains, like Solana and so forth, say they're scalable, we've actually seen issues where, like, maybe one major NFT is being minted, and the network come to a crawl, or if one major game gets released and, you know, the network fees spike up and the network gets congested. So we're talking about like one application that's like even just like slightly remotely popular. And we're not even talking about, like, let's just say if Pokemon came onto the blockchain, that would break like every chain possible. Like, if you think about it.
Yeah,
we still have a little ways to go in terms of, like, you know, scalability, but I think it's just a matter of chain of chains. It's like one way to sort of think about it. Like Polygon, for example, has another layer that people can build on top of that allow you to sort of like create your own a blockchain on top of the Polygon technology. So that's one example. Like, I think Avalanche has their like subnet, and obviously the Cosmo ecosystem has their own, Polkadot ecosystem has their own, and so forth. Like, everyone's sort of like branching off in terms of sort of application specific chains to be like built up. And I think over the long run, that's probably the way that we will scale out.
That's interesting. So, Are you saying it's better, or in your opinion rather, it's better we have a lot more options to explore, or as opposed to having a couple options that work really well? Because I do think when we have that many options to explore, it might tend to be chaotic. There might be so many moving parts, so many integration, as opposed to having 2-4 possible chains that just work really well and obviously are very scalable. And even when one hits its peak, we can easily like trickle down to the next one without that many hiccups.
Yeah, honestly, it's not an easy problem to solve. It's almost like, okay, you have an iPhone and then you have the App Store and then you have, like, you know, millions of applications. You know, there could be, you know, a couple of different app stores. You know, there's a Google Play Store, there's Apple App Store, there's, I don't know, there's maybe, I don't know, a Huawei Store. I don't know what kind of different app stores there are, but there's probably a few that support different applications that allow you to sort of like quote unquote find different chains. Maybe that's the way that it sort of like plays out. But one thing though, if every application is to sort of have their own quote unquote like dApp chain, the issue is like cross chain communication. And what we found is that like cross chain bridges are really, really hard to build. And there's a lot of like areas of vulnerability. We've seen like the biggest hacks in the, you know, in the crypto space coming from like cross-chain bridges. So until we sort of build up better infrastructure that allow people to sort of like communicate from one chain to another, it's going to be really hard to sort of like, you know, have this sort of like dApp chain like ecosystem.
All right, fair enough. Fair enough. So it's not really a one size fits all type answer. We just really need to evolve as the space evolves, as more solutions are proposed, and then we sort of like figure out what actually works and then work with it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think things will change really fast too. Like if you look at like the technology that's available today and the technology that was available, like let's just say 2 years ago, it has significantly changed, and like the way that we sort of approach like scalability in general. So like we continue to evolve, we continue to sort of like find better like solutions and different solutions. So like 2 years from now, in like, you know, 2024, we might be, you know, talking about something totally different.
Yeah, no, you're 100% right. I think I saw a tweet where someone said that in the past five years that Ethereum has actually done groundbreaking things in this space, and 100% respect to Vitalik and the entire Ethereum team. I think what they've done is quite fascinating. However, he did say he doesn't quite see what next Ethereum could do in the near possible future, or what purpose it serves besides sort of just being like a you could say a godfather in this space without any actual versatility. And I don't think those are not the right term, but I suppose my point is there's only so much Ethereum can do between now and the next five possible years, and you know, so what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, you know what, I honestly don't like predicting like crypto like related stuff for more than like even like 6 months, and like 5 years is just like an eternity. Like, you know, a year ago I probably would not have predicted, you know, well, maybe I would have predicted the Luna crash and the Terra crash and all that stuff. But like, you know, because like, you know, some people were talking about, you know, this was not a sustainable ecosystem, like, and all that stuff, and, you know, and all that. But like the effects of that sort of brought onto the rest of the ecosystem, where we found out a lot of centralized players were like severely like, you know, leveraged, and like, you know, Three Arrows and like, all that. And then all this like contagion that sort of happened because a bunch of other people sort of lent some money, like the Voyagers and the Celsius and the Nexos and all these people. Like, it's just like things change so fast. There's so much unpredictability in the ecosystem that like 6 months from now, 5 years from now, it's just I'm excited to see what people come up with and what they do with the technology, but it's going to be impossible for me to sort of predict what that will be. And, you know, Uniswap and like Curve came out like January of 2020. And now we have like this gigantic ecosystem around just like US dollar stable coins just swapping between each other. When they first came out, like, and when you think about it, what's so special about a decentralized exchange that allows you to swap between, you know, one US dollar versus to another US dollar based, like, you know, stable coin? That sounds so trivial. That sounds so, like, you know, boring. But it actually powers the whole, like ecosystem. And then you've built out, like, projects like Frax. You've built out, like, you know, now Curve themselves, they're talking about offering their own stable coin. Aave is offering their own stable coin. Who knows? Like, maybe Uniswap will offer their own like stable coin in the future. So the dynamics of the narratives continue to shift with like crypto, and it's really, really like exciting to see, but it's really hard for me to predict.
Yeah, I think that's a really good, I mean, it's a safe answer, but it's also a really good answer because, you know, there are so many things that are moving, and you don't want to be in the position where you have strong opinions for things that aren't really that deep. You know, you want to be very flexible and versatile. The space moves. It's in our best interest that whatever solution comes in that solves the problem. We don't particularly need to be maximalists on things, even when they are cake. I think essentially just adapt and grow and evolve as the space evolves. I think that is a more reasonable approach, you could say.
Yeah, absolutely. Being able to adapt is one of the most important parts of being in this like crypto industry. and that's mm-hmm. how you get through the bear markets, and you sort of like reap the benefits in the bull markets.
Mm-hmm. 100% on adaptability. I think I remember when Rush was sharing his story with us yesterday, and you know, he started in, you know, coming in at it from an investor standpoint, and you know, pivoted into building and just contributing to the space. And I think that, you know, again, for multiple different people, it's different. It could be coming in as a content creator, and here you are writing Solidity and building smart contracts. I suppose just adapting to whatever, however you possibly can, to maintain some level of contribution to the space is 100% essential.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's funny. One of the best, like, security contract auditors I know started off, like, just before he got into Solidity and you know, started learning about the blockchain. He was, like, a phone support person. And this was back in, like, to be, like, fair, like, 2015, 2016. Right. And then he got into, like, Solidity, learned the language, learned the code, started writing about it, like, starting talking about best practices. And now he's one of the most, like, known security auditors in the space.
Wow, that is pretty cool. Yeah. Awesome. Cool. So before we go in any further, if anyone here has any question, please feel free to raise your hand, and whatever your question might be, if it is DFX related, if it's crypto related, if it's finance related, we'll be more than happy to listen to what you have to say. So please raise your hand or request to speak, and we'll bring you up to speak. Right. So Kevin, I'm curious, what is one of the most exciting feature about DFX to you? What is that one thing about DFX that you particularly find exciting?
I think it's the ability for us to like generate such low fees for something that normally costs like so much. Like we're essentially giving institutional pricing to retail users like that they previously never had access to. We're talking about like 20, 50 times savings in terms of, you know, what they were previously paying. So like, I think like we're still very sort of like under the radar, and people don't understand how they can leverage DFX. We probably have to do a better form of communicating like the use cases and how we sort of help people save money. But like, you know, we're able to do that only with like blockchain technology, only because like we're able to pool funds together from people all around the world and provide a system that allows people to the trade efficiently. And I think that's the best part about like DFX. And like when I hear that people are actually using DFX to swap between different currencies and be able to like, and this is like, you know, they've been doing this for like years because they're sending money from one place to another, but they're being charged like a certain amount of money. Now they're getting it for significantly cheaper, significantly faster, and it's a lot more transparent. It sort of, that motivates me to sort of keep building. So I want to share this with the rest of the world. I want people to sort of like, be able to discover this technology and you know, hopefully help them save money, because a lot of the people like that end up using the technology, they may or may not be like whales with like, you know, millions and millions of dollars. They might just be making like a couple hundred dollars or $1,000 transaction, and that's a lot of money for them. And they're paying, I don't know, like could be $50 to send like $1,000 across the world. And that's a lot for them. And if they can reduce that down to like, I don't know, let's just say like $5 or like $2, that's a significant savings for them.
Yeah, 100%. That is a significant savings for them. And those are, you could say, the transactions that actually do matter as in the grand scheme of things, right? Someone trying to get a couple hundred or a couple thousand dollars across to someone else and realizing they could save just that much money is also one of the really cool things that crypto and decentralized technology affords us. And also the fact that it can be done by anyone from anyone anywhere in the world, you know, is just cool. You aren't bounded by the restrictions, perhaps with PayPal, with, you know, all of these other centralized financial services. So yeah, those are actually really, really cool things to look forward to.
absolutely.
So what were some of the more challenging problems you've had to solve, you and the entire DFX team? What were some of the most challenging problems you guys solved in more recently as you were pushing the product, maybe when you were in beta launch, alpha launch, or even right now?
We're a small team. We're not like, you know, a massive team. We're about like roughly 10 people. And, you know, we get a lot done for how lean our team is. Like go to market is obviously hard, especially for a technology based, like at a product based company or protocol like ourselves. And really, we are product first. So we make sure our product is working as best as possible. And then really, we rely on a vast amount of people in our community, especially our ambassadors, to sort of like help us spread the message and help us spread the word with DFX. And then right now, for example, we're going through some major changes for the DFX protocol. Like I mentioned before, we're changing our tokenomics. We're actually upgrading our contracts from what we consider V1 to V2. And all this stuff requires a ton of coordination. And it requires a work from not just ourselves on our team, but like a vast amount of our ambassadors and our community people to sort of like, you know, help like steer the ship the right direction. Uh-huh. And we can't do it alone. And we give a lot of thanks for the people that, you know, continuously, you know, follow the DFX project and continue to lend a hand in whatever way they can. And so very grateful to have these people like by our side. And really, we just want, like, as a group, we want to sort of like build out this like ecosystem. So you know, one thing I want to say, like, you know, it's tough to like build such a, you know, ambitious sort of project with such a lead team. Mm-hmm. But when you really think about it, it's much larger than just the 10 people on the core team. It's like hundreds of people and hopefully thousands of people in the future that contribute and, you know, provide support.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. It's a community effort, from feedback, from even conversations like this, getting on a show where you talk to people and educate people about the project, you know, obviously onboards a lot more people. And so, yeah, it's a community effort. It's a community, crypto community effort to ensure that whoever is solving one of the coolest problems, and that is what we are about here at the Dapp Place. If you're solving really cool problems, we want to talk to you. We want to get the community to know you. We want you to communicate your product, your protocol to everyone. And that essentially helps demystify a couple of things and obviously spreads the word. So yes, rooting for the DFX team. Super, super cool to have this conversation with you guys.
Oh, thanks for having me. And always enjoy having these kind of conversations, and especially when they're so organic and like mm-hmm. the conversation just flows. Mm-hmm. And especially for the people that came up on stage and asked a couple of questions, like, we want to be as transparent as possible. We want to provide as much information and education as possible. So you coming up here and asking it, like the person like next to you on the screen probably is thinking the same thing. So appreciate mm-hmm. the one that's willing to step up and say, hey, you know, can you help me answer this?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. You know, it's, so everyone, please, anytime, you can feel free to jump in. Still have a couple times to couple minutes to ask whatever question you might have. So like Kevin said, you know, the guy right next to you might be curious and you could just save them the day. So please, if you have any question, if you're curious about anything, or you know, you just want to encourage the DFX team, that is cool too. I see your mic is unmuted. Hey. General's account.
Hey, so I'll ask another question. Sure. Is there any plans on adding leverage trading in between these currencies?
Yeah, that's in the sort of medium term roadmap. Our sort of like immediate roadmap is to get the new VDFX and DFX V2 out, and then in hopefully the next, you know, couple of months, we get sort of leverage working. But one thing for leverage trading is that you need a sort of sufficient spot market to do liquidations. And if we don't have like a sufficiently large spot market, it you can't really do a leverage market. So we sort of have to beef up the TVL and some of the pools to sort of even enable the leverage trading. But those are things that we obviously keep into consideration. And, you know, as our protocol evolves, we'll we'll look to offer these kind of services.
Cool. Sounds good. Looking forward to it.
All right. Sweet. Awesome. Thank you for the question. Thank you for your response, Kevin. Cool. And that is it. You know, it's been super fun, super fun, super fun to have this conversation with Kevin from today. I'm pretty sure for the entire week when my team has been like working with you guys, going back and forth, like, you know, the AM we had on Telegram, you know, the Board Dev Chat Club and Explain Like I'm Five we had on Discord. Shout out to Rush and Cody for that. That was a super fun session. And here we, you know, we concluded that with Kevin today. And that has been really cool. But let us keep the conversation flowing. Follow the DFX account on Twitter at DFX Finance. And, you know, DM Rush, DM Kevin or the DFX main account for whatever questions you might have. And I'm pretty sure it's solid, you know, you get whatever response. And yeah, no, we are, it's time to build, like Kevin said. It really is a time to build. So just keep your head down, you know, adapt, learn some skills and just do cool stuff. And I am excited, curious and looking forward to the next couple months. Learn from Kevin to not have that much of a very long time frame and just keep it relatively short and adapt as time progresses. So yes, it's been fun. Thank you so much for coming on here, Kevin. Thank you, the entire DFX team. Thank you, Nerbik. And thank you to the entire DAPLIS team for giving us this platform to have this.
Thanks, guys, and have a good weekend.
Awesome. Have a good weekend, guys. Thank you for showing up and take care.